can so do this intro. I can do it. Hey guys, what's up? It is once again Drunk and Dangerous with your hostess, Dangerous ASMR. If you were expecting somebody else, then I apologize. There are no guests on today. Just me, myself, I, and all the many characters I have been known to play. So it is, let's see, 11:41 in the afternoon on Tuesday, and I am irresponsibly high. But you know, to be fair, this is work, right? Right? This is work. It doesn't feel like work, but I would like to say, you know, I had to get stoned on Tuesday afternoon for my job. Oh my god. Like, this is honestly, like, my fucking dream. Like, getting to do something that I fucking love and get stoned on a Tuesday afternoon. This is why I love you guys, like, so fucking much. What the hell? Okay, before I start saying, like, oh, I love you, man, I'm gonna continue and actually do the thing that I'm meant to be doing, which is to be reading more of The Eye of Argon. Insert cheering noises here. Fuck yeah. I love this stupid story. Oh my god, so much, because it makes me feel so much better about my own writing abilities. You guys, anybody else feel like that? You're like, this got published. I can do anything. And just keep going. Eventually, someone will publish it. I mean, if this could get published, goddamn. But okay, so we're starting up where we last left off with that lady who passed out, and Grignr being his Grignr self, decapitating people, doing his thing. I still picture him as a little tiny, like, dwarf man, like, with bushy beard and the mustache and everything, and a Viking helmet for some reason to go with his loincloth. And of course, he's, like, got red hair, right? Like, full on, like, Viking style. That's Grignr in my eyes, until I, you know, hear otherwise. And I am very optimistic for the return of Prince Chungus, or the heroine. If she arrives first, then she will be the vocal doppelganger of Prince Chungus. It has been decided. Everyone in the comments decided and agreed with me that Prince Chungus must make a return, whether in his original corpulent French male body or in whatever this female is like, her body. It doesn't matter. Gender's not that important. Maybe Prince Chungus is a shapeshifter. Huh? Some kinky, weird sex thing, maybe? Okay, I really need to start the story. Damn. Okay. The Eye of Argon. Chapter 6.
"Take hold of this rope," said the first soldier, "and climb out from your pit, slut. Your presence is requested in another far deeper hellhole."
For a second, I thought it was going to say, "Your presence is requested in another far deeper hole." I'm like, I'm just picturing them being like, "Good news, that extra, extra large ditch opened up. You're moving to a deeper hole." And of course, obviously, the sexual euphemism. We all know what the deeper hole is. It's the ass. It's very deep, you know. So he's not moving. He's moving into a deeper hell hole. So just kind of like a different layer of hell, like deeper in. Grignr slipped his right hand to his thigh, concealing a small, opaque object beneath the folds of the G-string wrapped about his waist. So Grignr has a G-string wrapped about his waist. And apparently a small opaque object is hidden beneath the folds of the G-string wrapped about his waist. Gonna guess that was from the lady that he screwed in, like, the beginning. You remember? Where he banged the lady, and then the the guy was like, "That's my woman." And then in response, he ripped the guy's head off because he was like, "Stop, you know, fucking my girlfriend." And he's like, "What? Decapitate you with my bare hands? Bitch." Like, it's probably her G-string. He wears it as a reminder of the guy's head that he chopped off. I'm sorry, ripped off. And I don't know what the small opaque object is. I'm gonna guess it is, I was gonna say like his dick, like he was wearing the G-string, but it's wrapped around his waist, so I doubt it's his dick. So it's probably like, you know what I'm gonna say? I'm gonna say he does part-time massages like out of his van. And he offers hot stone massages. And so the small opaque object was one of the stones from his side business. This is a drive-by hot stone masseuse. But then I realized that was probably pretty far-fetched. And we're like two sentences into this story. And I'm already so sidetracked. Okay. Okay, so to recap, because I took forever to say it. The soldier said, "Take hold of this rope, climb out of your pit, slut, you're gonna be in a far deeper hellhole." And Grignr put his hand on his thigh and hid a small opaque object, could be a stone for his massage business, under the G-string from his last conquest that's wrapped around his waist. And now we will continue. I can keep this together. Brian Wells. What? Okay, this is how we're going to describe Grignr tearing up. Follow with me. Brian Wells swelled in Grignr's cold, jade, squinting eyes, which, grown accustomed to the gloom of the Stygian pools of ebony engulfing him, were bedazzled and blinded by flickering. It actually is flickering radiance cast forth by the second soldier's resin torch. I'm going to call crying getting the Brian Wells from now on. So if you see a sad movie, you're like, does anybody else get the Brian Wells every time you watch Up? Like, oh my God, my Brian Wells overflowing. There's so many things that I'm like, the head is an oval. Lots of things can just be their generic shape, you know? I'm gonna do this. Okay, so we saw a torch. Tightly gripped in the second soldier's right hand, opposite the intermittent torch, was a large double-edged axe, a long leather-wound oaken-handled transfixing the center of the weapon's iron head. Adorning the torsos of both of the sentries were thin yet sturdy hauberks, the brett plates of which were woven of tightly hemmed twines of reinforced silver braiding. Cupping the soldiers' feet were thick leather sandals, wound about their shins to 2 inches below their knees. Wrapped about their waists with wide satin girdles with slender bladed poniards, don't know what that is, dangling loosely from them, the hilts of which featured scarlet encrusted gems. Resting upon the manes of their heads and reaching midway to their brows were smooth copper morions. Spiraling the lower portion of the helmet were short, upcurved silver spikes, while a golden hump spired from the top of each bassinet. Beneath their chins, wound around their necks and draping their clad shoulders, dangled regal purple satin cloaks, which flowed midway to the soldiers' feet. Okay. This guy can go into this much motherfucking detail about what the soldiers are wearing, but all we hear about Prince Chungus is that he's super fat. We don't know anything else about this dude. But now we heard a fucking manual on what these fuck. I don't give a shit. I zoned out 2 words into that goddamn description. No one cares. God damn it. Just sum it up. The soldiers were dressed. Tell me about their bodies. Were they all rippling with muscle? Tell us. Were they sweaty? Yeah, I bet they were real sweaty. All those battling days and wrestling with each other out back between being, whatever, they soldiers. They're soldiers, right? I forgot about this. And oil wrestling, hot oil wrestling in their underwear. These studly, rippled, muscular soldier men. I mean, why couldn't we have gotten that description? I call shenanigans. Hand over hand, feet braced against the dank walls of the enclosure, huge Grigner. Please don't let that be the one adjective people would use to describe me. I know I'm tall, but if people are like, oh, have you met her? What she's like? She'd be like, oh, the best thing to describe her is huge. Huge Grigner. You know, okay, so I'm getting the idea that he's probably not a dwarf. Because he says things like huge, towering, monstrous Grigner. He's probably more like the Hulk, right? Like, but not green. Grigner colored. Okay, so Grigner's huge. Would it be possible to scale up a dwarf? Like, to like however tall he is, like 7 feet tall, assuming he's like super huge. Could we just scale him up? Maybe. Like an extra large dwarf? We should think about that. Okay, let's start from the beginning. Hand over hand, feet braced against the dank walls of the enclosure, huge Grigner ascended from the moldering depths of the forlorn abyss. His swelled limbs, stiff due to the boredom of a timeless inactivity, compounded by the musty atmosphere. That's really what it says. Atmosphere. By the musty atmosphere and the jagged granite protuberant against his body. I mean, maybe he should have fucking moved away from the jagged granite protuberant. Craved for action. The opportunity now presented itself served the purpose of oiling his rusty joints and honing his dulled senses. He braced himself, facing the second soldier. The sentry's stature was wildly exaggerated in the glare of the flickering cresset cupex in his right fist. His eyes were wide open in a slightly slanted, owlish glaze, enhanced in their sinister intensity by the hawkbill curve of his nose and pale yellow peak of his cheeks. That's definitely a Spider-Man villain. It is.
Place your hands behind your back,
said the second soldier as he raised his axe over his right shoulder blade and cast a wavering glance.
We must bind your wrists to parry any attempts at escape. Be sure to make the knot a stout one, Broig.
That's a great... Okay, I take it back. Grigner's not the worst name. You could be Broig, which is like Greg and Brad, but also an Oi in there. Is there any male name with an oi?
Broig. Broig.
I was so sick the other night. I broigged all over the floor. It was awful.
Be sure to make the knot a stout one, Broig. We wouldn't want our guests to take leave of our guidance.
Broig grasped Grigner's left wrist and reached for the barbarian's right wrist. Grigner wrenched his right arm free and swiveled to face Broig, reached beneath his loincloth with his right hand. The sentry grappled at his girdle for the sheathed dagger, but recoiled short of his intentions as Grigner's right arm swept to his gorge. The soldier went limp, his bobbing eyes rolling beneath fluttering eyelids, a deep welt across his spouting gullet. Ew. Without lingering to observe the result of his efforts, Grigner dropped to his knees. The second soldier's axe cleft over Grigner's head in a blaze of silvered ferocity, severing several scarlet locks from his scalp. Coming to rest in his fellow's stomach, the iron head crashed through the mail and flesh, with splintering force, spilling a pool of crimsoned entrails over the granite paving. This world, and I don't know if it's just with Grignr, because I haven't seen anybody else be decapitated or have their entrails ripped out unless Grignr was involved. But if that's as commonplace as it seems, those pavements must, they just put redstone in at this point. They must see so much blood on a regular basis. I mean, what's their death-birth ratio, you think? Was it like, you know, 2 to 1? Eventually there won't be any people left. Before the sentry could wrench his axe free from his comrade's carcass, he found Grignr's massive hands clasped about his throat, choking the life from his clamped lungs. What are these clamped lungs? What are they clamped with? Please, somebody who knows better, comment it below, because I don't friggin' get it. With a zealous grunt, the accordion flexed his tightly corded biceps, forcing the grim-faced soldier to one knee. The sentry plunged his right fist into Grignr's face, digging his grimy nails into the barbarian's flesh, ejaculating a curse through rasping teeth. His teeth are rasping. God, your teeth are like... I imagine you go to floss and they're like... Grignr surged the bulk of his weight four-eared, bowling the besieged soldier over upon his back. The sentry's arms collapsed to his thigh, shuddering convulsively. There's an airplane! Can you guys hear that? Sometimes I complain about an airplane on the audio, and I can hear it really loud, but then when I go to actually edit it, because I edit out most of the background noise, then I'll realize nobody can hear it anymore, and I just sound like a crazy person. But this is really loud. I guess I'll just continue. God damn planes, motherfucker. His bulging eyes staring blindly from a bloated cherry red face. That's attractive. Rising to his feet, Grignr shook the blood from his eyes, ruffling his surly red mane as a brush fire swaying to the nighttime breeze. Okay, guys, redheads, you gotta listen to this. Next time you shake your hair, you need to refer to it as ruffling your surly red mane as a brush fire swaying to the nighttime breeze. That's so poetic. Stooping over the sprawled corpse of the first soldier, Grignr retrieved a small white object from a pool of congealing gore. Snorting a gusty billow of mirth, but it's through his nose. He's got to have a big nose. He's a huge man. He's got the huge nostrils. That's like the whole, do the curtains match the drapes? Yeah. Does the stature of the man match the nostril? I bet he's got the biggest, most flared nostrils for snorting. In, what's that called? A gusty billow of mirth. Mirth me, baby. He once more concealed the tiny object beneath his loincloth. Okay, let's start that sentence over. Snorting a gusty billow of mirth, he once more concealed the tiny object beneath his loincloth. It sounds like, unfortunately, Grignr is... We finally hear about his object that's beneath his loincloth, and the state is that it's tiny. I am sorry, Grignr. You can't win them all, buddy. And, I mean, if anybody insults you, you can just rip their head off, so it's good. You know, don't worry about it. The tediously honed... Oh, okay, I'm sorry. I just assumed it was his member. But instead, I ignored the second part of this sentence, which is that the object is the tediously honed pelvis bone of the broken rodent. Makes no fucking sense to me, but okay, whatever that means. Probably not his dick. Returning his attention toward the second soldier, Grignr turned to the task of attiring his limbs. What is a... Okay, what does attiring your limbs mean? Not tiring them, but attiring them. And no, he's not getting his limbs dressed. Is that what it is, attiring his limbs? Does he mean he's going to put sleeves on? A shirt? Is that what it means? He turned the task of attiring his limbs? That is very odd. To move about freely through the dim recesses of the castle would require the grotesque garb of its soldiery. Aha, it is getting dressed. That is fucking weird. That is weird. Honey, come on, we gotta go. Just go attire your limbs already. Okay, good. Saying that out loud, I now realize it's not just me being stoned. It's actually as weird as it sounds. I hope. I mean, if everybody else is using this, then I'll be like, fucking God, everyone's been doing this the whole time behind my back. To move about freely through the blah, 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 grotesque garb, blah, blah, fancy voice. Utilizing the silence and stealth acquired in the untamed climes of his childhood, Grignr slink through twisting corridors and winding stairways, lighting his way with the confisticated torch. I'm sorry, confisticated? Real, it's like confusing and sophisticated, confisticated, plus also there's some kind of fisting reference in there. Oh man, he's been confisticated. Ooh, maybe it's when like an ex-con fists somebody like really well. You've been confisticated. Like a fisting conquistador maybe? Whatever that is. Grignr slink through twisting corridors and winding stairways, lighting his way with the confisticated torch of his dispatched guardian. Knowing where his steps were leading to, Grignr meandered... Wait, what? Okay, it says, knowing where his steps were leading to, Grignr meandered aimlessly in search of an exit from the chateau's dim confines. I think he meant not knowing where his steps were leading to. Or, Grignr's stalling for time. He's like, I know what the fuck I'm doing, but I'm gonna act dumb. Oh, we get you, Grignr. We know you're in on it the whole time. Grignr's taking forever, looking for an exit. The wild blood coursing through his veins yearned for the undefiled freedom of the livid wilderness lands. I'm pretty sure it's wilderness, and I just said wilderness. He can't just live in the wilderness. It has to be even wilder. I don't understand. He can't live in the wilderness. He must live in the wilderness. In the wilderness. Sorry. I hope that's not offending anybody. Okay. Grignr doesn't know what he's doing. He's full of wild blood. Like a horse, I'm imagining like a galloping stallion. And it's coursing through his veins, yearning for the undefiled freedom of the livid wilderness lands. He sounds like he's got Pocahontas blood. Coming upon a fork in the passage, he shrieked. Voices accompanied by clinking footfalls discerned to his sensitive ears from the left corridor. Wishing to avoid contact, Grignr veered to the right passageway. Thank God he didn't do the left one, am I right? I mean, the left one, am I correct? I am. If accosted as to the purpose of his presence, his barbarous account would reveal his... Oh, his barbar... It's accent, not account. His barbarous accent would reveal his identity, being that his attire was not that of the castle's mercenary troops. So he can't put on a fake accent? He has to talk like a barbarian?
Grignr! Grignr soldier!
Like... He can't just be like, I, Grignr soldier. That would totally pass. I mean, all the very muscly, sexy, oiled up soldiers there all sound like women pretending to be men, so Grignr would fit right in with his voice. In the grim silence, Grignr treaded down a dingily lit corridor. a stalking panther creeping warily along on padded feet. After an interminable period of wandering through dull corridors, no gaps to break the monotony of the cold gray walls, Grignr espied a small winding stairway. Descending the flight of arced granite slabs to their posterior, Grignr was confronted by a short hallway leading to a tall arched wooden doorway. Halting before the teeming portal. I mean, it must be teeming with portals. There's at least two. Halting before the teeming portal. Grignr restes his shaggy head sideways against the barrier. Okay, so what they're saying is he stopped before the door and put his ear against it. But the way you should say that is, halting before the teeming portal, Grignr restes his shaggy head sideways against the barrier. I love how everything can just be the most simplified version of what it is. A door is a barrier, but also a portal. Detecting no sounds from within, he grasped the looped metal handle of the door, his arms surging with a tremendous effort of bulging muscles, yet the door would not budge. Retrieving his axe from where he had sheathed it beneath his girdle, he hefted it in his mighty hands with an appeased grunt, whatever that is, and wedging one of its blackened edges into the crack between the portal and its iron-rimed sill. I guess he's going to say rimmed with one M, I guess. Bracing his sandaled right foot against the roughly hewn wall, teeth tightly clenched, Grignr apple-levered the oaken haft, employing it as a lever whereby to pry open the barrier. Door. The leather-wound hilt bending to its utmost limits of endurance, the massive portal swung open with the grating of snapped latch and rusty iron hinges. Glancing about the dust-swirled room in the gloomily dancing glare of his flickering cresset, Grignr eyed evidences of the enclosure being nothing more than a forgotten storeroom. Wow, you thought you were in a jail, and it turns out the whole time they just stuck you in a shed somewhere. And I'm just picturing him in the back of a U-Haul, and he's just, the heat has him hallucinating all these things that are happening. And at the end, he busts the door open, and he's like, it was a U-Haul this whole time. I'm sure that's not what it means. But I like that idea. Miscellaneous articles required for maintenance of a castle were piled in disorganized heaps at infrequent intervals toward the walls opposite the barbarian's piercing stare. Utilizing long, bounding strides, he's practically skipping, Grignr paced his way over to the mounds of supplies to discover if any articles of value were contained within their midst. He's gonna go rob the U-Haul. Of all its weird castle organizing tips, or whatever the fuck is contained on there. Detecting a faint clinking sound, Grignr sprawled to his left side with the speed of a striking cobra, landing harshly upon his back, torch and axe loudly clattering to the floor in a morass of sparks and flame. An elm-woven board leaped from collapsed flooring, crashing against the jagged flooring and spewing a shower of orange and yellow sparks over Grignal's startled face. Wait a minute. So, a wooden board, fell onto the floor and it sparked a shower of sparks over Grignar's face? But it's a elm-woven board. So is it woven with metal? Because how else would it make sparks when it hit the floor? I'm thinking too much about this. Rising uneasily to his feet, the half-stunned accordion glared down at the gruesome arm of death he had unwittingly sprung. Merrific! He's not saying terrific. It's just the way I'm pronouncing it. It's MRIFK. Merrific.
Terrific. It's grific.
Mrific. Mrific.
There, it sounds less like mrific. If not for his keen auditory organs and lighting steeled reflexes. Lighting steeled reflexes. Grignr would have been groping through the shadowed hell pits of the Grim Reaper. Thank God he didn't die. He had unknowingly stumbled upon an ancient, long-forgotten booby trap, a mistake which would have stunted the perusal of longevity of one less agile. It would have stunted the perusal of longevity? You mean it would have killed you? I'm sorry, I've got some terrible news. We found out that the cancer is metastasized. It's all over your body. I'm afraid that there's nothing more we can do. You're gonna have to prepare to have the perusal of your longevity stunted. I mean, honestly, like, what the fuck is that? No, I'm stunted. Well, I've always been stunted, but, you know, short bus things. A mechanism, similar in type to that of a miniature catapult, was concealed beneath two collapsible sections of granite flooring. The arm of the device was 4 feet long, boasting razor-like cleats at regular intervals along its face with which it was to skewer the luckless body of its would-be victim. So, there's a catapult. Oh, the floor is granite. How did a wooden board hit a granite floor and cause sparks? Did it hit the torch, maybe? I mean, okay, well, I'm disappointed. So apparently, the booby trap, underneath the collapsible granite flooring, there is a catapult. The arm is 4 feet long, it has razor-like cleats, and the catapult apparently would skewer you with those cleats. Cool. Well, he avoided it, apparently. Grignr had stepped upon a concealed catch which released a small metal latch beneath the two granite sections, causing them to fall inward and thereby loose the spiked arm of death they precariously held in. I need one of those for my house. If I ever get one. Partially out of curiosity and partially out of an inordinate fear of becoming a pincushion for a possible second trap, Grignr plunged his torch into the exposed gap in the floor. The floor of a second chamber stood out 7 feet below the glare. Tossing his torch through the aperture, Grignr grasped the side of an adjoining tile, dropping down. Glancing about the room, Grignr discovered that he had descended into the palace's mausoleum. Rectangular stone crypts cluttered the floor at evenly placed intervals. The tops of the enclosures were plated with thick layers of virgin gold, while the sides were plated with white ivory, at one time sparkling, but now grown dingy through the passage of the rays of the all-encompassing Mother Time. So we're discussing the passage of time as rays? The passing of time is the passage of rays. Time now comes in rays. We are one step closer to a ray gun time machine. So that's a plus. So the ivory is dull because it's old. Featured at the head of each sarcophagus in tarnished silver was an expugnatively carved likeness of its rotting inhabitant. A dingy atmosphere pervaded the air of the chamber, which, sealed in the enclosure for an unknown period, had grown thick and stale. Intermingling with the curdled currents was the repugnant stench of slowly moldering flesh, creeping ever slowly but surely through minute cracks in the numerous vaults. Due to the embalming of the bodies, their flesh decayed at a much slower rate than normal, yet the nauseous odor was nonetheless repugnant. Wow. So Grignard's now gone from escaping, and now he's in this really fancy-ass sarcophagus. That's not where I expected the story to go. Towering over Grignard's head was the trap he released. The mechanism of the miniaturized catapult was cluttered with mildew and cobwebs. Notwithstanding these relics of antiquity, its efficiency remained unimpinged. To the right of the trap wound a short stairway through a recess in the ceiling, a concealed entrance leading to the mausoleum for which the catapult had obviously been erected as a silent, relentless guardian. Climbing up the side of the device, Grignard set to the task of resetting its mechanism. In the event that a search was organized, it would prove well to leave no evidence of his presence open to wandering eyes. Besides, it might even serve to dwindle the size of an opposing force. Descending from his perch, Grignard was startled by a faintly muffled scream of horrified desperation. His hair prickled yawkishly in disorganized clumps along his scalp. Okay. I mean, does anyone's hair prickle in clumps along your scalp? Why is his hair in clumps? Is it matted? I mean, maybe he was in jail and he didn't have a brush and his, like, really long, fancy, gorgeous barbarian hair got really matted and now it's in clumps on his scalp. Please don't judge him. He hasn't had a mirror. That's my assumption. As a cold danced along the length of his spinal cord, no moral/mortal barrier, human or otherwise, was capable of arousing the numbing sensation of fear inside of Grignard's smoldering soul. Ah, I get it. His amygdala has been damaged. However, he was overwrought by the forces of the barbarian's instinctive fear of the supernatural. Barbarians are instinctively afraid of the supernatural? That's like finding some kind of natural bear repellent, right? So a barbarian will always be afraid of the supernatural. So basically, dress up as a ghost and go, ooh, spooky, and it's barbarian repellent. Fucking genius. His mighty thews had always served to adequately conquer any tangible foe, but the intangible was something distant and terrible. Dim, horrifying tales passed by word of mouth over glimmering campfires and skins of wine had more than once served the purpose of chilling the marrowed core of his sturdy-limbed bones. Yet, the scream contained a strangely human quality, unlike that which Grignard imagined would come from the lungs of a demon or spirit, making Grignard take short, nervous strides advancing to the sarcophagus, no, don't do it, from which the sound was issuing. That's what the ghosts and demons want you to think. Didn't you fucking watch The Exorcist? She sounded just like that guy, Demi, Demi, oh Demi, why you do this to me, Demi? You know, the dude's mom, the old fucking Italian mom who sucks cocks in hell, apparently, according to the demon. He sounded just like a person. Don't open the sarcophagus. That's what they want you to do. Ugh. Girl. Clenching his teeth in an attempt to steel his jangled nerves, Grignard slid the engraved slab from the vault with a sharp rasp of grinding stone. Another long-drawn cry of terror, infested anguish, met the... I'm sorry, it's terror-infested anguish. It hurts and also I'm afraid. Met the barbarian, scoring like the shrill piping of a demented banshee, piercing the inner fibers of his superstitious brain with primitive dread and awe. Stooping over to espy the tomb's contents, the glittering accordion's nostrils. You guys? Okay. He glitters. Here's the quick question, and then I'll continue. Accordions, are they naturally glittery, or does Grignard use body glitter? Or was glitter part of the torture that he was having in the hell hole that he was in? I like the thought of Grignard, like, sneaking in some, like, body glitter, because he still likes to feel pretty, even when he's in prison. We know Grignard. Yeah, we know. Fucking rock that glitter, Grignar. Damn, girl. Yeah, he's glittering. The glittering accordion's not, or it could just be his nostrils that are glittering. And he's like huffing glitter. Like maybe in this weird ass fairy tale universe, glitter's like cocaine. And so he's snorting glitter. He's got like addicted to it. So his nostrils are just covered in glitter. And people are like, man, you got some glitter on your nose. And he's like, what? Oh, no, that's not glitter. That's baby powder. And they're just like, you have a problem with glitter, man. And he's like, get off my back. I can stop whatever I want. You're just jealous. Okay. All right, he's got a glitter problem. The glittering accordion's nostrils were singed by the scorching aroma of a moldering corpse long shut up and fermenting. So was it the corpse screaming? Was it the fucking ghost and demon playing the fucking exorcist grandma lady voice? I think so. The same putrid scent which permeated through the entire chamber, though multiplied to a much more concentrated dosage. The shriveled, leathery packet of crumbling bones and dried, flacking flesh offered no resistance, but remained in a fixed position of perpetual vigilance, watching over its dim abode from hollow, gaping sockets. The tortured cries were not coming from the tomb, but from some hidden depth below. Pulling the reeking corpse from its resting place, Grignar tossed it to the floor in a broken, mangled heap. It's kind of a really funny image, like, get the fuck out of here, you stupid corpse. Yeah, and it just, like, on the floor. And the corpse is like a single tear run down its eye socket. Like, why? I did nothing to you. Why do you destroy my home? My heart is broken. The end. Upon one side of the crypt's bottom was attached a series of tiny hinges while running parallel along the opposite side of a convex railing-like protuberance. This guy loves the word protuberance. Let's start. Okay, I have to picture this because it's not coming through to me. Upon one side of the crypt's bottom was attached a series of tiny hinges while running parallel along the opposite side of a convex railing-like protuberance, that's where I'm getting lost, laid so as to appear as a part of the interior surface of the sarcophagus. Okay, so one side of the crypt's bottom has hinges that run parallel the side of a convex railing-like protuberance. Still not getting it. Raising the slab upon its bronze hinges, long removed from the gaze of human eyes, Grignar perceived a scene which caused his blood to smolder, not unlike bubbling, molten lava. See a doctor for that. Your blood should not be carbonated, no matter how mad you are. Does steam come out of his ears, too? Directly below him, a whimpering female... Oh, is it gonna be the Frenchie? It's gonna be the Frenchie. Directly below him, a whimpering female lay stretched upon a smooth-surfaced marble altar. A pack of grassy-faced shaman. I'm just gonna say it the way it's supposed to because it's funnier. A pack of greasy-faced shaman clustered around her in a tight circular formation. One of us. One of us. They're all greasy-faced. I mean, there's some, like, really quality skin products out there nowadays. Like, I have combination skin. I feel you, shaman. You can fix it. There's lots of things you can do. Don't give up. Crouched over the girl was a tall, pot-bellied priest, his face dominated by a disgusting, open-mouthed grimace of sadistic glee. Suspended from the acolyte's clenched right hand was a carven oval-faced mallet, which he waved menacingly over the girl's shadowed face, an incoherent gibberish flowing from his grinning, thick-lipped mouth. In the face of the amorphous, broad-breeded, breasted female, stretched out alluringly before his gaping eyes, the universal whim of nature filing a plea of despair inside of his white-hot soul, Grignar acted in the only manner he could perceive. Giving vent to a hoarse, throat-rending battle cry, oh! Grignar plunged into the midst of the startled shaman, torch shimmering in his left hand and axe twirling in his right hand. Does the torch shimmer more than the glitter in Grignar's nose? A gaunt, skull-faced priest. Wow, he's close to death anyway. Just push that guy over. A gaunt, skull-faced priest standing at the far side of the altar clutched desperately at his throat, coughing furiously in an attempt to catch his breath. Lurching helplessly to and fro, the acolyte pitched headlong against the gleaming base of a massive jade idol. Writhing agonizedly against the hideous image, foam flecking his chalk-white lips, the priest struggled helplessly, the victim of an epileptic seizure. Wait, did the priest, like, just randomly have a seizure in the middle of the fight? Was he so surprised? He's like, oh my god, I'm so shocked, it's sending me into an epileptic fit. Oh, it was the torch, right? Was the torch pulsing so much that it sent the guy into epileptic shock? I hardly feel like that's Grigner's fault. I mean, a simple torch did it? Or was it maybe it was the torch shining off the glitter? And it is the glitter. It's got to be the glitter. So the guy had a seizure. Startled by the barbarian's stunning appearance. Oh yeah, he's stunning in that glitter. The chronic fit of their fellow and the fear that Grigner might be the avant-garde of a conquering force dedicated to the cause of destroying their degenerated cult, the salmon momentarily lost their composure. Giving vent to heedless pandemonium, the priests fell easy prey to Grigner's sweeping arc of crimson death and maiming destruction. The acolyte performing the sacrifice took a vicious blow to the stomach, hands clutching vitals and severed spinal cord as he sprawled over the altar. If your spinal cord is severed and can be held in your hand, just let it go. Put your hands to better use. It's not going to do anything. I'm not a doctor. Oh, God. Okay, I'm not a doctor. If you happen to get an injury in which you can hold your severed spinal cord and you're still alive and awake, then don't listen to what I say. Do whatever somebody else tells you to say. I'm not a doctor. Please do not sue me. Oh, God. Okay. Okay, the disorganized priests lurched and staggered with split skulls, dismembered limbs, and spewing entrails before the enraged accordion's relentless onslaught. The howls of the maimed and dying reverberated against the walls of the tiny chamber, a chorus of hell-fraught despair as the granite floor ran red with blood. They should already be red. We've already discussed this. Maybe like a darkish reddish brown, you know? Like dried blood, because eventually it will dry. The entire chamber was encompassed in the heat of raw savage butchery as Grigner luxuriated in the grips of a primitive, beastly bloodlust. This is like the longest chapter ever. Presently, all went silent, save for the ebbing groans of the sinking shaman and Grigner's heaving breath, accompanied by several gusty curses. The well had run dry. No more lambs remained for the slaughter. The rampaging stead of death having taken of Grigner for the moment, left the barbarian free to the exploitation of his other perusials. Towering over his head was the misshaped image of the cult's hideous deity, Argon. The fantastic size of the idol, in consideration of its being a pure jade, was enough to cause the senses of any man to stagger and reel. Yet thus was not the case for the behemoth. He had paid only casual notice to the incredible fact, while riveting the whole of his attention upon the jewel protruding from the idol's sole socket, its masterfully cut faucets emitting blinding rays of hypnotizing beauty. After all, a man cannot slink from a heavily guarded palace while burdened down by the intense bulk of a squatting statue, providing, of course, that the idol can even be hefted, which in fact was beyond the reaches of Grigner's coursing stamina. On the other hand, the jewel, gigantic as it was, would not present a hindrance of any mean concern.
Help me, please. I can make it worth your while.
Pleaded a soft, anguish-strewn voice. I'm assuming it's the girl. I really hope it's not. Otherwise, it's some random other French dude. Pleaded a soft, anguish-strewn voice wafting over Grigner's shoulders as he plucked the dull red emerald from its roots. Turning, Grignr faced the female that had lured him into this bloodbath, but whom had become all forgotten in the heat of the battle.
"You,"
ejaculated the Agordian in a pleased tone.
"I thought that I had seen the last of you at the tavern, but verily I was mistaken."
Grignr advanced into the grips of the female's entrancing stare, severing the golden chains that held her captive upon the altar's highly polished face of the ornamental limestone. As Grignr lifted the girl from the altar, her arms wound dexterously about his neck, oh yeah, they're gonna bone, soft and smooth against his harsh exterior.
"Art thou pleased that we have the chance to meet again?"
Grignr merely voiced a side grunt, returning the damsel's embrace while he smothered her trim, delicate lips between the coursing protrusions of his reeking maw. So he has bad breath, and the coursing protrusions are his lips.
Gotcha.
"Let us take leave of this wretched chamber,"
stated Grignr as he placed the female upon her feet. She swooned a moment, causing Grignr to give her support, then regained her stance.
"Art thou able to find your way through the accursed passages of this castle?"
"Mrific! Every one of the corridors of this damned place are identical."
"Aye, I was at one time a slave of Prince Agafem. His clammy touch sent a sour swill through my belly, but my efforts reaped a harvest. I gained a pig's liking, whereby he allowed me the freedom of the palace. It was through this means that I eventually managed escape at the western gate. His trust found him with a dagger thrust his ribs,"
the wench stated whimsicorically. Whimsicorically. Categorically whimsical, it is whimsicorically.
"What were you doing at the tavern whence I discovered you?"
asked Grignr as he lifted the female through the opening into the mausoleum.
"I had sought to lay low from the palace's guards as they conducted their search for me. The tavern was seldom frequented by the palace guards, and my identity was unknown to the common soldiers. It was through the disturbance that you caused that the palace guards were retracted to the tavern. I was dragged away shortly after you were escorted to the palace.
What are you called by, female?"
"Cartenia, daughter of Mincardos, Duke of Barwego, whose lands border along the northwestern fringes of Gorzom. I was paid as homage to Agafem upon his 38th year. Husked the femme?"
"And I am called the barbarian," grunted Grignr in a disgusted tone.
"Aye, the ways of our civilization are in many ways warped and distorted, but what is your calling?"
she queried, bustily. I like the question mark because I think they even realize you can't ask something bustily.
Oh my god.
Okay.
"Grignr of Accordia."
"Ah, I have heard vaguely of Accordia. It is the hill country to the far east of the Noregolion Empire. I have also heard Agafem curse your land more than once when his troops were rooted in Onacasta mountains and gorges,"
saith she.
"Aye, my people are not tarnished by petty luxuries and baubles. They remain fierce and unconquerable in their native climes."
After reaching the hidden panel at the head of the stairway, Grignr was at a loss in regard to its operation. His fiercest heaves were as pebbles against the burnished armor. Carthena depressed a small symbol included within the elaborate design upon the panel, whereupon it slowly slid into a cleft in the wall.
"How did you come to be the victim of those crazed, greasy-faced shaman?"
quested Grignr as he escorted Carthena through the piles of rummage on the left side of the trap.
"By Agafem's orders, I was thrust into a secluded cell to await his passing of sentence. By some means, the priests of Argon acquired a set of keys to the cell. This Ludegarde placed over me and abducted me to the chamber in which you chanced to come upon this casuistic sacrifice. Their hellspawn cult demands a sacrifice once every 3 moons upon its full journey through the heavens. They were startled by your unannounced appearance through the fear that you had been sent by Agafem. The prince would have surely submitted them to the most ghastly tortures if he had ever discovered their unfaithfulness to Sargon, his bastard deity. Many of the partakers of the ritual were high nobles and high trustees of the inner palace. Agafem's pitiless wrath would have been unparalleled.
They have no more fear of Agafem now,
bellowed Grignar in his deep, mirthful tone, a gleeful smirk upon his face.
I have seen that they were delivered from his vengeance.
Engrossed by Carathena's graceful stride and conversation, Grignar failed to take note of the footfalls rapidly approaching behind him. As he swung aside the arched portal linking the chamber with the corridors beyond, a maddened, bloodlusting screech reverberated from his eardrums. Seemingly utilizing the speed of thought, Grignar swiveled to face his unknown foe.
So, are they saying that, like, for the first time, Grignar seemed to think about something?
Or he moved as quickly as a person could think, in which case he is insanely fast.
I like to think that he's got super speed now. And doesn't he also have, like, monkey arms and bear claws, or was that the shaman? I don't remember. With gaping... Oh, yeah. Yeah. Seemingly utilizing the speed of thought, Grignar swiveled to face his unknown foe. With gaping eyes and widened jaws, Grignar raised his axe above his surly mane. But he was too late. That's the end of chapter 6, which was incredibly long. I'm gonna end it here, guys. I had so much fun reading, as I always do. A short story is longer than I thought it was, but I'm kind of thankful because it's so much fun. Thank you guys so much, if you made it this far, for listening to me. I had such a freaking blast this week, as I always do. And I will see you next week for chapter 7. All right, I'll talk to you later, guys. Mwah. Bye.